All right, everyone. We are back with another episode of the Delta Flyers. And this week, we have none other than Tim Russ. So, Tim Russ, thank you. Congratulations on being back as our, what, your third time now, maybe? Fourth? I don't know. You've been a...
Yeah, second or third, at least.
Yeah, wow. A habitual guest. So thank you for that. We appreciate that so much.
Yeah, I can't believe Garrett and I got through the whole series every week for 3.5 years. We did an episode and...
It's so funny because I was talking to Robbie earlier. I said, it's 2.5 years. Robbie's like, no, dude, it's 3.5 years. I go, oh my God. But yeah. I can't believe it, but we're through it.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But now with this, this labor thing going on, the strike, the SAG-AFTRA strike, we can't do any more content that, talks about projects. So we were talking to Michelle Hurd on one of our podcasts, and she said something that just struck me, which is she talked about the relationship between actors and the audience and how that is at the heart of why people watch these shows and, elevating the actors, talking about the creative process. That's what we should be talking about. So that's kind of what we're doing is we're talking to our castmates and our friends, our actor friends about, their creative process and their relationship with the audience and all that. So, so happy to have you here.
Yeah. And so we're going to begin with a little before we get into the creative process, we're just going to begin with just the setup of your background. You were born in DC, Washington, DC, June 22nd, 1956. You're 12 years older than me. You're year of the monkey, the Chinese zodiac, just like I am. McNeil is year of the dragon. So we are very good friends on the Chinese zodiac. You, me, and McNeil were buddies. Okay. And I know you've moved around. So U.S. Air Force has moved you around.
Yes.
Turkey was a great part of your growing up period, your formative years. Is that right? And then Rome as well. So one thing that's kind of new to me recently is the fact that you played football in high school. And that's something that Beltran had no idea of when we were on stage in Vegas. He had no clue. But playing football, just for everyone's sake, did you begin that in grade school, like Pee Wee? Did you play then, or did you only play in high school?
No, it was just high school varsity team in high school, and that was overseas in Turkey because there weren't as many kids over there, so for them to fill out a team, everybody damn near had to play.
Yeah,
there's no way I could have played on a varsity team in a high school in the States unless it was in the middle of nowhere because the guys were, three times my size.
Okay.
And strength. So I was lucky enough to have the opportunity because I was in a place where there was only a handful of guys to play football.
Right. So, and you played offense and defense, correct?
Yes,
you had to play
defensive end.
Well, offensive and defensive end.
That's right.
Which is a pretty big size, position now in the NFL. At the end, they're big. Yeah. They're huge.
I had to stay on the field the whole time because just went from one side to the other. So there was no break in there. It was wonderful. I was a kick in the pants. And I did have a wonderful moment during one of the games where I was able to score a touchdown on a pass and actually helped to save the game because we were behind by two touchdowns. So I got one of them.
Oof.
And then, the quarterback threw just a Hail Mary for the last one. And the receiver caught it in the end zone and we actually won. So.
That's exciting.
Wow. You're a hero. That's a big moment in high school to have a moment like that.
That was a wonderful moment.
Robbie, you know that Tim's middle name or middle initial is D for Daryl. So TD, he's Touchdown Russ is what he is. That's awesome, dude.
100 years ago and it was very cool.
Yeah. Wow. But when did you get the actual, you know, creative urge to start acting or your music? I mean, did that begin in grade school or is that high school later?
That was the same place. I was in Turkey and we were in high school and I took an acting class when I was 16. At the time, I took an acting class and I thought it was just the most amazing thing in the world. It was so much fun. It was so interesting.
Wow.
And consequently, the teacher put on a couple of musicals during that time and I was able to, I got cast in them and performed them.
Oh, so the acting bug bit you in Turkey.
Right there.
Wow. Yeah. What led you to take that first acting class, though? Was anybody in your family doing theater or performing or?
No,
or
well, why? At the time I was already by that time playing music. So I'd already you know, started playing guitar and playing music. My brother played drums. So I was performing, you know, live in that sense prior to taking the acting class. And then the acting class was just like, you know, it was almost like an elective, you know, thing. It was just like, let me do this just to see what it's like. And it was just wonderful. It was amazing. I just took to it and it bit me. I got to say, that's what happened. It just bit me. And then, you know, I worked in the two shows at the time. So the closest I came to otherwise before that was playing music, you know, and it's still kind of the same thing in terms of compared to performing on stage live. So it's kind of the same thing.
But your music began in Turkey as well. That's when you started. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And what instrument did you play first? What was the first?
Guitar. I was playing guitar.
Guitar number was the first thing. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Actually, I started even before I got to Turkey. I think I started playing guitar when I was in Colorado Springs. Before we left to go there, I started playing guitar.
And why did you choose that instrument, though? Was there someone a role model that played guitar that you've tried to emulate?
Or? No, not really. It was just, you know, my brother was playing the drums at the time. So I figured, well, if he's playing drums, I'll play guitar. You know,
so if he was playing guitar, you'd be playing drums.
Yeah, I might have picked up drums. I don't know. I really like the guitar more than the drums. And hell, it's a lot easier to schlep around than a drum set. So
that's true. Yeah.
And a lot less noisy. You can play guitar; people don't mind, you know, as opposed to banging on drums.
Who are your guitar role models in terms of people who are super proficient at playing the guitar? Who do you love?
Back in the day, the influences were Terry Kath of Chicago, Carlos Santana. And a couple others, Hendrix, but those two, mostly Santana, Carlos Santana and Terry Kath of Chicago. And beyond that, there's some guys that are out there right now that are just incredible, but those were the ones that influenced me earlier on, for even the style that I, you know, play lead guitar in. So yeah, I was impressed by all of that. And at the time, you know, rock was guitar driven. It sort of is still today, but it was really driven by guitar back then. So, you know, I just took to it and that was it, you know. Hmm.
Did you ever play with your brother?
Oh yeah. 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 We played in a couple of different bands along the way, played in a band in upstate New York in my senior year of high school. And we played overseas in Turkey in a band as well. It was an eight piece. Both those bands were seven piece bands. We had a full horn section.
Wow.
You know, playing R&B at the time. And it was fantastic. And then after that, you know, I was off into school and, you know, we didn't get back together again to play until much, much later. And that was just intermittent, you know. But at the time we played, both of those times we played in upstate New York and also in Turkey. And it was a big, you know, seven, eight piece band, which was fantastic.
You know? What grade were you in when you took that acting class?
I was a senior in high school.
Junior
in high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, when you were in Turkey, did your brother play football with you as well?
No, my brother played junior varsity.
JV football.
Yeah, JV football. Yeah.
Yeah. But not varsity.
No. Was there anything in that acting class? So you just got bit by the bug.
Yeah.
Was there anything like that your teacher that happened to you really early on that you still think about? Like, did you learn things right at the beginning or did you really learn things later in your acting kind of, you know, journey?
Yeah. The most of the stuff, you know, that came in terms of learning techniques and or processes came in later on. And that was in college. Yeah. Most of the stuff that I got from the high school class was just an introductory to improv and some scene work and things like that. Yeah. And being in the shows. What happened in that was actually being on stage and performing live in front of an audience. That's what did it. You know, that's what took it over the top, was being out there on the stage, man, and you know,
yeah,
and performing in front of a live audience, man. You know.
Well, yeah. Can you take us from the point of graduating high school in Turkey and then going to St. Edward's University, a Catholic college in Austin, Texas, of all places? How did that happen? I mean, why did you choose that place?
Well, you know, I sometimes think about, you know, the hindsight we have. We can't see into the future, because otherwise that would be a Twilight Zone episode. You know, and I always think about the fact that you look at the path that you're on. Well, all of us have this path that we've been on, but we can only go back and look and see, you know, what decisions we made at the time. And we have no idea how those things are going to play out. And this is a perfect example. When I got out of high school, I had taken the SAT test and all that stuff. And then you get offers from colleges and stuff based on your interest in whatever the scores are. So I got a college invitation from Akron University, Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
Which is a big established, you know, big university. And then I got this little one from St. Edward's University in Austin. And man, I looked at their theater program, which was unbelievable at the time.
Really? And,
wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was unbelievable. And
that sold you, clearly.
Yeah, 100%. And there are a couple of stories to go with it, at least one story to go with it. But at the end of the day, I said, this theater program is incredible. It's so focused, so heavily focused on theater. The idea and the concept was Edward Mangum, who established co-established the Arena Theater in Washington, D.C., he came to that college that didn't have a theater program, and he started the theater program. He got an arena theater built on the campus.
Wow.
And he ran the program. And he would have celebrity actors from Hollywood come in and perform in the shows with the students.
What?
Wow.
During the school year, two shows in the fall and the spring. So it's four shows during the regular school year. And three shows of repertory company theater shows in the summer, back to back rep company shows.
Wow.
Full on stage, full on all the goodies, and every one of them with a celebrity professional actor out of Hollywood. That was his program. And I only had to take one or two prerequisite courses, you know, outside of theater every semester. So I was averaging 11 hours of theater. Starting from freshman year, whereas all the universities, you don't even get a chance to do anything until your last 2 years.
Yeah.
It started out as almost, it's like a training. It's like you went to a specific school, like an associate's degree school, and just focused on one thing. Yeah. In this 4-year college, the idea was that when you got out, you could either work in any number of the areas of theaters and actually open your own theater. They would train you enough that you start your own theater by the time you got out in 4 years. That's what this school was.
That's insane. I've never heard of a school with that type of focus.
I think one of my kids, my youngest Carter, looked at St. Edward's pretty seriously because their whole liberal arts program is incredibly strong.
Wow.
And he was playing rugby at the time, and they had a big rugby team at St. Edward's.
There you go.
I don't know if they did when you were there, but
no, they didn't have any. No, there was that was not their thing at the time.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been perfect for Carter, but he didn't go there though. He did not.
He was very close to going there, but it's a great school. I remember looking at it and
wonderful.
It's a great school, and Austin's a great town. Did you have great experiences in Austin as a city?
Austin was fabulous because the University of Texas is almost all downtown Austin.
It's
a 40,000-50,000 student university, so it's very diverse, it's very cosmopolitan, it's very progressive, and it's, you know, there was a lot of music that came through Austin as well.
Austin is an amazing town.
It was fantastic. It was party town, great party town.
You were a hog in high heaven in Austin. You got everything there, and that university right?
For 4 years.
What celebs do you recall coming in to do productions with you guys?
Roger Mosley, who I think was on a series before we got there. And also William Shatner was there.
What?
William Shatner came through and did Does a Tiger Wear a Necktie? That was the play he did.
Wow.
And there's more than that. Mercedes McCambridge we worked with. Donnie Most we worked with.
Wow.
The late Sal Mineo.
Sal Mineo? Oh, my God.
Godfrey Cambridge. And a few others. And there's one actor in particular who came through, who I worked with in the play called Caligula. And that was Leonard Nimoy.
Whoa. Nimoy was in Caligula with you? Oh,
correct.
Holy moly.
Wow. God. I've never heard this. I had no idea. That's incredible.
Yeah. And so obviously,
what are your memories of Leonard? Did you get to interact with him much? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We would stage the play and block the entire show out before the celebrity actor would get there.
Yeah.
They would get there about 2 weeks before the actual performance.
Okay.
So we would have the entire play blocked out.
Yeah.
They would sit and watch the performance with the student playing the role of the actor the actor is going to play.
Right.
And so the actor watches the entire play through. Then they start blocking rehearsals the next day. So at the time, I was understudying his role, playing the role of Caligula.
Wow.
And
that's incredible that you end up playing a Vulcan.
Yes. And then watched it and he, you know, he played and did his own style in his own way of performing Caligula and playing it, which was not necessarily classical. The way we were directed was in a classical style, which dealt with how we walked, how we talked, how we physically sat. Everything was done in a classical style.
Yeah.
But he did it more of a modern style. So he kind of fit that into what we did. But at the end of the day, I end up playing a character based on his character.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He ever come up to you after you got onto the show and said, "Hey, St. Edwards," did that ever happen? Were you guys?
Oh, no. Well, I think I did bring it up when I talked to him briefly. I said, "We worked together on Caligula," and he remembered. Absolutely. Remembered.
Yeah.
It was a very cool play and a very intense part. So
But Tim, you were a fan of his, right? At that point. Yes.
I mean, we were, as I've always said, we were watching, all of us were watching reruns.
Yeah.
It just kept doing this constantly. Yeah. So, you know, there's nothing else. I mean, there's no streaming. Yeah. There's no, DVD.
But in comparison to the other guests that came in from Hollywood, I'm going to go on a limb and say you were more excited about name. Shatner and Nimoy being there than the other four or five.
He was a very big name to have in at the time. He garnered a lot of attention, a lot of stuff. So absolutely. And again, you know, Edward Mangum, who was the guy that the theater director at the time, was just, he was brilliant that he ran that program the way he did. So we ultimately, as it were, down the line, again, you can't see into the future. You can't see what's coming in the future. But that is, I would have had no idea, not clue, not a dream, not a, anything that would have, you know, led to so many decades after that, you know, ending up playing that, that role. So,
So what are the creative processes or tools in your toolbox that you learned in college that you still dip into when you're approaching a character or a scene or a play or whatever?
I think the, one of the things I learned in college was a concept of phenomenology. It's what the, it's a term that's a scientific term that applies to several different things. But one of the professors used it in terms of getting, extracting everything you need to get out of the script. Phenomenology and that concept has to do with everything that is needed to understand the whole is within the whole. So you need to have whatever you're getting from that character is coming from what you have is the information from the script, getting all that information from what's in front of you, what's been written, and trying to put together and create that character based on what the word is, you know?
Right.
And the word is important.
Yeah.
It comes down to being more important than anything else, actually. It makes so much sense. I was in an acting class I was auditing an acting class a while ago. It was years ago, and I remember sitting in there, and these students got up and they were doing a scene that they had chosen together. And you know, about halfway through it, one of the actors says something to the other actor, and the teacher stopped him and said, "Wait a minute, it's not realistic. It makes no sense. It's not real. It's not genuine. That person would never say that under these circumstances." The other person that said, "Where did you get that material from?" And it was something that they had written. You know, one of the two of them had written themselves. And so she was making the point that it was not a realistic moment. It was not an honest, realistic moment based on the motivation of the characters because they did not have the word right. The word wasn't written properly and correctly. And we know that when we see something dramatically enacted, you know, sometimes we sit up and said, "Wait a minute. You know, that doesn't make sense, or that's not believable, or this is that and the other thing." So if you got to create this moment, this character, and you're building the layers of this person, you got to be able to glean whatever you can out of the material. What are the actions of the character? What do they decide to do? What are they, you know, how does that work?
Well, this leads me to a question.
Yeah.
When you have had as an actor, even when we work together, when you've had a creative difference,
yes,
with the script where you're like, this doesn't make sense, or playing it this way, or saying these words.
Right.
How do you navigate that creative difference, whether it's on set or beforehand with the writers, or even if you don't get the change you hoped for?
Right.
How do you navigate that conflict that you feel and make the performance make sense? How do you deal with those creative conflicts?
It depends, because if it's an independent project, say for example an independent feature, and those are just, you know, they go from one end of the planet to the other as far as the scope and scale, generally before I even get started, you know, I let them know that, you know, and for me to take this role, I'm gonna want to be sure that everything makes sense with this character, the dialogue is working, and I'd like to have the opportunity to change the dialogue if I feel it needs to be changed. And that may just be because it's repetitive, or it's roughly, or phrases are all funky. Just to have that opportunity. But if there's a major motivational thing, I will definitely bring it up with them. If it's a television project, a television show, most of the time they're all pro writers. So it's not that much of a, I don't have to change anything. It's all there on the paper, and it works just fine. I might ask for clarification about something here and there that comes up. I might say, "Well, does that mean this, that, and the other thing?" Whatever, for clarification. Yeah. Generally, I'm not on there trying to, you know, change the direction of the whole scene or the character, because I usually don't have to. But if it's an independent project where people are, you know, maybe striking out for the first time in their script or whatever, and they don't have experience writing, then yeah, I'm going to have something to say about it. Even before we get started, I'm going to look at that thing and I say, I want the latitude to be able to discuss the character's motivation, and or all the way down to just the way the dialogue is written in one scene or another. So I will approach them and I will ask in a minute if something doesn't make sense. You know, if it's contradictory, you know, you have me doing one thing in one scene and something in another, that drives me mad. You know, if it's not consistent, you know, in terms of what the character's motivation is, unless you give the character something that he sees or does or whatever, something happens to him that changes his mind, that shifts his perspective. Yeah, sure. Then it's in the script. It's in the stuff.
It sounds like you do a lot of research and you're very meticulous about that. Let me ask you this. When you get on set and you've done your research, you don't have a problem with the words or what the script says or anything like that, but you get on set and the actor across from you is doing something that you don't expect, or that you know, the actor is like doing something that they haven't, you know, they've gone off on a tangent somehow. How do you deal with that creative difference if you're a scene partner with somebody?
Yeah, Tim, when that person's in another reality, okay, an alternate reality that's not your reality, how do you deal with that?
That's a tricky bit. So far, I haven't had to worry about that, or I haven't had to deal with that.
Good.
You know, especially on television and film, I've been very lucky.
You are lucky.
Really, the only thing that I might have run into is that their performance may not be, you know, up to par, or it might be subpar, or might just, they could do a little better with the performance, and that's it. And in those, otherwise, if I have a situation with an actor like that, I'd have to go to the director, whoever's in, you know, running the show, or producer, whatever it is, and discuss with them. They said, look, I don't know how, I'm not sure if that's going to work with what I'm doing. I mean, yeah. Ask them, does that look like it's working, or is that make sense to you? Because
you've got to be careful with fellow actors. You're an actor with another actor, 100%. To go to that actor and say, hey, you should do this, or don't do that. You can't do
you
that.
No, you can't.
It's like giving him a line reading, basically.
You've got to use the director. Yeah.
You can't do that. You have to go to the director or producer and just, exactly. You know, I'm wondering if this is going to, I'm wondering if this is going to work. What do you think? I mean, I'm doing this and he's doing that, or she's doing that, and this is not, this is funky. I don't know if this is going to play or not. Fortunately, again, I have not had anything that was that dramatic in terms of an issue like that. I've just had maybe a couple of occasions where the other person might not have been as experienced as I was. And, you know, that was all there was. And, you know, in some cases like that, the director would work on them and get them up to speed. So I've been very lucky.
I do have a question. Your father was in the Air Force. Your mother worked for the government. So neither of them were in the theater or in the performing arts or music. So the question remains, did they support your decision to major in theater when you went to college?
I'd say my mother was supportive more than my dad was. My dad wanted me to, he would have liked me going to the military and followed his tracks. Okay. So he was not excited about me going to study theater at that university.
But he did not forbid you either. So
no,
he
did not stop me. He just didn't think it was going to pay off at all down the line. And, you know, it's being in the military and being in something that's very secure and financially secure and would establish a career compared to that. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Do you remember the time where you finally got validation from your father of where he kind of looked at you and said, hey,
it would have been when I was here in LA and I was performing in Dreamgirls at the Schubert Theater. I had the fourth male principal role in that show. So he came to see the show and was very excited about that.
Do you know Roxanne Dawson was an usher at the Schubert Theater, we found out?
No way, really?
She was. She ushered for Chorus Line. So not far before your Dreamgirls.
That's absolutely true.
Would she have been there then?
She might have been an usher for
Dreamgirls.
I think she might have, maybe. Or she may have left. She might have been in Chorus Line at that point.
Right.
But that's crazy that you both performed at the Schubert, which is no longer there, sadly.
It's no longer here. It's gone.
That theater is no longer there.
Yeah,
it's gone.
Did you make that decision to go to Illinois State because you felt like you wanted more time before moving to LA or New York? I mean, what was the
at the time they offered me a fellowship, so they were going to pay me a stipend per month to be a student in a graduate program there.
Wow.
And it was very disheartening, that whole thing, because I would have had to stay there like another year to get my master's, and I chose not to. I was there for about a year.
Oh, you left? Okay.
Yeah, I did, freezing my keister off in the winters there.
okay.
I've never seen cold like that before. But it was a different, that was an academic program, more okay. so than, more so than what I was doing at St. Ed's. I came out of St. Ed's yeah. with this, you know, this visceral, organic, you know, hands-on sort of experience, you know, in all these areas of theater, being able to, you could write, you could playwright, you could direct. I was directing plays at St. Ed's in my second year. I was actually yeah, directing one acts on an arena theater stage. I mean, yeah. just, you Wait. Could do anything. And then I'm going up here and it's all concepts and book. I mean, it's just, it was
yeah, and
just,
you're freezing your keister off. And yeah, basically, and
yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a letdown. Let's face yeah. it. It's a letdown because you were at the superstar program for the undergrad. So now you're trying to get the MFA at Illinois State. You're freezing your butt off. There's no celebs coming in to do yeah. productions with you guys.
Nope,
it's like you went from eating like filet mignon to an oatmeal. It was so plain. You were like, oh, yeah. no.
I like oatmeal, Garrett. Yeah. Oatmeal's good for you.
Sometimes oatmeal's good.
Cholesterol. It's got a lot of benefits.
I got some bits and pieces from there, yeah. you know, academically that I could use here and there, you know, since that time. I've got something out of it.
Right.
It just wasn't, I just didn't feel I wanted to stay another year.
Yep.
There, I wanted to get out to California, so I just decided to, well, I'm going to cut out and go do this instead. So
84, 85, what was the year that you moved?
Moved back to California in 80.
Yeah.
And then came down
80?
To LA. Yeah, in 80, and then came down to LA in 81.
81, okay. So you were, because your first credits don't happen until around 85, so you were putzing yeah. around for about yeah. 4 years, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to, you know, pay rent and find
of course.
Place. Some of bullshit course. Job to keep me alive and pay, you yep. know, all that stuff. So I was, you know, struggling like everybody else that comes here for the first time for at least right. 5-6 years.
Yep.
And then finally
it worked out for you though, Tim. It worked out.
yeah, it worked out. I would not have been able to see that necessarily in front of me. I just,
no.
I made a couple of decisions here and there and bingo. And in fact, one of those decisions that I can only look back on was just one of the agencies I was with at the time. I was going to leave them for another agency because they weren't getting me in the door for larger projects. And so I was going to leave. And I talked to the receptionist there, said, you know, why don't you just stay for a little bit longer? We're going to get a new agent next week. Just hold on before, you know, you go trying to find another one. Cause you may not be able to find one for a minute. So just stay here and we're going to get another agent. Don't worry about it. We're hiring next week. And I decided, okay. And I was reluctant to do so, but I decided, okay, I'll stick around.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the agent that they picked up, who was a rookie, you know, she was just starting out, but she hustled her ass off. So she got me in the door to feature and I was able to book it, and that was the end of that. So everything wow. from that point forward. If I had left that agency, I don't know if I'd be talking to you guys right now.
Wow. Was that feature the Charles Bronson one or no?
Nope.
Okay,
that
something.
Was,
okay.
That was Virginia Madsen and Craig Sheffer, multi-feature film with those two actors in it as the leads, yeah. and I had a supporting role. So once that was out and released, I was able to garner, you know, a couple other feature projects and then went from there to television. So if I had not stayed there, I don't
stayed
know.
There.
You may not have done that. Did you have scenes with Virginia Madsen in that film?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Because I was in, it was a Romeo and Juliet sort of thing. So there was a yeah. boys camp and a girls camp.
Yeah.
So I was the supervisor at the boys camp. So there was not supposed to be any mingling.
Yeah.
I think, so.
Yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Did you even mention that to her when she guest starred on our show later? I mean,
I've worked with her three times.
Oh,
funny.
Three times, and I worked with her brother two times.
Wow,
Yeah,
you're an honorary Madsen.
You are. You're Timothy. You're Touchdown Madsen. Timothy Darrell Madsen. That's your name. Okay.
I know. It's crazy, man. That worked with her that many times is just wild. So yeah. Again, you know, could you predict it? You know.
Yeah. And then the night that you were working on the Charles Bronson movie, I was there too. Remember, we talked about that.
That is correct. How coincidental is that?
Crazy.
I'll tell you something else that's coincidental. I worked one day with Avery Brooks.
Oh,
wow. LeVar Burton
and Avery. Avery Brooks, LeVar Burton, and Kate Mulgrew.
Oh, she was in there too.
All worked the same day. We worked the same day on set.
That's insane.
Way before all the other stuff getting involved.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well,
how could you possibly have known?
I know. It's insane. But I want to say thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you and your time and your wisdom. We've learned some new things for sure.
Yes, we have. Stories I've never heard.
We've never ever heard of some of these stories, but we know about them now. So thank you for that. And,
I don't break them out that often. It's just once in a blue moon, I'll break them out. They're very relevant for this particular conversation. So
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into our episode with our wonderful guest, Tim Russ. And join us next week when we will have yet another guest that we will be having a deep dive with into their life and their early formative years and whatnot. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.